Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI canonizes five new saints, inviting all to be drawn by their shining examples and to be guided by their teachings. We take a look at who the newly canonized Father Damien was and at how leprosy was feared by all. And we shine the spotlight on the role the media has in building peace in Africa. A saint is one who doesn't put themselves at the centre, but rather chooses to go against the grain and live according to the gospel. These were Pope Benedict XVI's words on Sunday during the canonization mass of five blessed, a bishop, two priests, a religious brother and a religious sister, held in St. Peter's Basilica. Eva McCarthy has this report.
The Church has five new saints: a French woman who dedicated her life to the care of the elderly and abandoned, a tireless Dominican preacher, a Trappist Cistercian oblate monk and mystic, a Polish archbishop and defender of the faith, and a Belgian missionary who gave himself to the lepers on the margins of 19th century society. Thousands converged on St. Peter's Basilica for the ceremony from Spain, Poland, Belgium and Hawaii, the overspill filling St. Peter's Square. They watched closely as Archbishop Prefect of the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, Angelo Amato, read the names of those to be inscribed on the roll of saints. They listened intently as Pope Benedict, in his homily delivered in various languages, told us that although their examples are from a distant past, their witness is still relevant today.
Sigmund Szczesny, Felinski, Francisco Coligitar, Joseph Damoin de Voeste, Raphael Arnaez Baron, and Marie de la Croix, Jeanne Jugon.
Pope Benedict spoke of oblate monk Raphael Arnaez Baron, who died at age 27 after leaving a comfortable life to follow Christ, and the French religious Mary of the Cross, engaged in assisting the elderly, who still today, Pope Benedict noted, suffer multiple poverty and loneliness, being sometimes even abandoned by their own families.
Felicien, Geburteland Flandern, 23 Jahre alt was.
However, the greatest part of his homily was given to the humble figure of a Belgian missionary priest who left his homeland at 23, bound for the island of Molokai off the west coast of the great continent of America, an island that during the 19th century was a colony of lepers. He was Damien Joseph de Vesteur.
Il nous invite à ouvrir les yeux sur les lèpres.
Not without fear and loathing, noted Pope Benedict in his homily, he made the choice to go to the island of Molokai in the service of lepers who were there, abandoned by all. So he exposed himself to the very disease from which they suffered. With them, however, he felt at home. The servant of the word became a suffering servant, leper among lepers.
Rendiamo grazie al Signore per il dono della santità.
Pope Benedict concluded, their perfection in the logic of a faith sometimes humanly incomprehensible subsides in their no longer focusing on themselves but in choosing to go against the current trend in living according to the gospel.
Il mezzogiorno ci invita alla preghiera dell'Angelus.
Following Mass, the Pope made his way to the raised dais before St. Peter's Square for the midday Angelus prayer. In comments in French and English, he asked for prayers to help guide the success of the ongoing Synod of Bishops for Africa here at the Vatican. And then he had a very special greeting for a particular group of pilgrims all the way from the land of the rising sun.
I also greet a group of survivors of the nuclear attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I pray that the world may never again witness such mass destruction of innocent human life.
Then, as the tapestries bearing images of the newly proclaimed saints were unfurled in the autumn breeze to adorn the facade of the basilica, Pope Benedict took his leave.
May God bless all of you, as well as your families and loved ones at home.
I'm Emma McCarthy.
Thanks there to Emma McCarthy for that report. As Emma mentioned in her report, one of the five canonised on Sunday was Father Damien, the Belgian missionary who devoted 16 years of his life to caring for lepers, isolated on the Hawaiian island of Molokai. He was beatified in the June of 1995 during an apostolic voyage to Belgium by Pope John Paul II. As Jill Bevilacqua tells us, until just recently, leprosy was seen as a most loathsome and repugnant disease, striking fear in the hearts of many, including in that of St. Francis of Assisi.
While modern dictionaries give fairly lengthy descriptions of leprosy in semi-medical terminology, my father's old Shorter Oxford is vivid in its brevity. Leprosy, a loathsome disease which slowly eats away the body and forms shining white scales on the skin, common in medieval Europe. Somehow, one doesn't think of leprosy as being white. And yet the poet Coleridge, in his Rime of the Ancient Mariner, speaking of the spectre woman on the skeleton ship, writes,
"Her skin was white as leprosy. The nightmare life in death was she, who thicks man's blood with cold."
Lepers in the time of our Lord and for centuries afterwards were the outcasts of society and had to live on the edge of towns and cities. Not only was their disease infectious, it made their appearance so awful that people could not bear to look at them. Today, when leprosy is no longer incurable, the metaphorical use of the word leper is applied to a person who is shunned for social or moral reasons. But the attitude of revulsion towards the victims of AIDS has shown that we have not progressed very far in our civilization. There are some illnesses which are socially unacceptable. We'd rather not be too close. If we'd lived in the early 13th century, we'd have found the attitude of the young Francis of Assisi towards lepers perfectly normal, so that when God told him to prefer bitterness to sweetness, he had to make a superhuman effort to overcome his natural feelings. He wrote in his testament,
"During my life of sin, nothing disgusted me like seeing victims of leprosy. It was the Lord himself who urged me to go to them. I did so, and ever since, everything was so changed for me that what had seemed at first painful and impossible to overcome became easy and pleasant. Shortly after, I definitely forsook the world."
In his biography of Francis, Omar Engelbert sets the scene and tells the story of the young man's change of heart.
If we are to believe the chronicler, Matthew of Paris, there were no fewer than 20,000 Lazarets in Europe at that time. Everywhere, one would run across these unfortunates, whose putrefying flesh, oozing ulcers, and pestilential odour brought disgust. The young dandy had such a horror of them that if he saw one 2 miles away, he would turn his horse's head and gallop off, holding his nose, and he sent someone else to take alms to him. But one day, at a bend in the road, he suddenly found himself facing a man afflicted with leprosy. His first reaction was to turn back, but he immediately changed his mind, and dismounting, he embraced the wretch, gently putting some coins in his hand. He thereupon felt a great happiness pervade his whole being. It was God keeping his promise and changing bitterness to sweetness for him who had preferred bitterness to sweetness. But the young man was not content with this first victory. He sprang to the saddle and rode to a neighbouring lazaret, apparently St. Lazzaro d'Arce, about 2 miles from Assisi. Francis entered this last refuge of all human misery. He assembled its unfortunate inmates and begged their pardon for having so often despised them. He lingered some time in their company, and while waiting to come and live near them, he distributed money to them and left only after kissing them all on the mouth.
In the June of 1995, on a 2-day pastoral visit to Belgium, Pope John Paul beatified Father Damien, the Belgian missionary who devoted 16 years of his life to caring for lepers isolated on the Hawaiian island of Molokai, himself contracting and dying of the disease in the April of 1889. That same year, the first association against leprosy was founded in London, with royal patronage. When Damien arrived in Molokai, he had no shelter for the night but that of a large tree. He nursed the dying in miserable huts, where the air was so foul he could scarcely breathe. For the first few years he worked totally alone. But through his efforts and representations he made to influential people in Hawaii, conditions gradually improved. And by the time of his death, there was a hospital with a doctor and nurses, a school, pretty white cottages. But although the world acclaimed Damien and his work, one man, in a letter to a fellow minister, for he was a minister, expressed surprise at what he called extravagant newspaper laudations, and proceeded to attack Damien's character. The letter was printed in the Sydney newspaper of the minister's denomination, and was read by none other than Robert Louis Stevenson, author of Treasure Island and numerous other successful books. Stevenson was so incensed that he wrote an open letter to the Reverend Dr. Hyde of Honolulu, which appeared in the Scots Observer and later in the Australian Star. Stevenson was persuaded that Hyde's letter was inspired by a certain envy because of the comfort he lived in, and he reminded Hyde that he had never visited the scene of Damien's life and death.
Had you been there when I was pulled ashore there one early morning, it is my belief that nature would have triumphed even more in you. And as the boat drew but a little nearer, and you beheld the stairs crowded with abominable deformations of our common manhood, and saw yourself landing in the midst of such a population as only now and then surrounds us in the horror of a nightmare, what a haggard eye you would have rolled over your reluctant shoulder towards the house on Beretania Street. Had you gone on, had you found every fourth face a blot upon the landscape, had you visited the hospital and seen the butt ends of human beings lying there, almost unrecognizable, but still breathing, still thinking, still remembering, you would have understood that life in the lazaretto is an ordeal from which the nerves of a man's spirit shrink, even as his eye quails under the brightness of the sun. You would have felt it was, even today, a pitiful place to visit and a hell to dwell in.
When the first symptoms of leprosy appeared in Damien, he was not dismayed and told the doctor it was neither a shock nor a trouble to him.
I knew it must come, and it is God's will. Having no doubt myself of the true character of the disease, I feel calm, resigned, and happier among my people.
At his own request, Damien was buried under the great pine tree, which had been his first shelter.
You've been listening to a programme written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua, with readings by Sean Patrick Lovett. If you listen to my programmes, you will most probably have noticed how much I care for Africa. African issues, African stories, African tragedies and African joys. Interviews with Africans and with African experts have peppered my slot here at the English Feature Programme ever since I started. But often it hasn't been easy to speak to people directly, and I've had to settle for crackly long-distance telephone interviews and the lack of personal contact with my interviewees. So you can imagine how happy I was to hear that Africa was coming here to the Vatican. Yes, I'm referring to the Synod for Africa that is currently taking place in the Vatican Synod Hall, just down the road from the radio. The protagonists there are bishops, priests and laity from each of the 53 African nations, as well as from Orthodox, Anglican and Protestant churches on the continent. What a chance for me to actually get to meet them and to talk to them about their hopes and their fears, and what a range of subjects and situations to be able to analyse. One of the issues I have at heart is the importance or the role of the media when it comes to what is probably the most forgotten, the most neglected, the most exploited of continents. I marched up to the Synod Hall with my microphone and my special accreditation for the event, determined to inject meaning into what I do.
I'm going to ask you a question that is a bit focused on what we do. Do you think the media have a role in bringing peace to Africa?
The media have a very, very important role. Actually, the media conditions what we think and how we perceive the events. So the role of the media is paramount.
Bishop George Biguzi is the bishop of the Diocese of Makeni in Sierra Leone.
Depending from what they decide to stress, it can give a sense of direction, of hope. It can help to reconcile. It can help for avoid violence, violent reactions. So it can also work very negatively. Now, thinking of Africa, what comes to my mind is that radio in Burundi during the genocide of the Thousand Hills, you know, that spread, it put really poison in the mind of the people. So, the role of the media is paramount. And it can be very deadly, but it can be also very good to spread God's word and bring peace and hope to the people. So I really look forward to a great role of the media.
Yes, depending on what the media decides to stress, it can give a sense of hope. It can help to reconcile. But it can also work very negatively. And not only in the sense that Bishop Biguzi just illustrated by being instrumentalized and by spreading poison, as did Radio Burundi in 1994, but also, as Cardinal Gabriel Zubeya Wako, Archbishop of Khartoum in Sudan, says, by not being independent and by portraying a reality that is not real at all.
Some media has struggled to do something. But their influence is very weak, because I think most of the media in the outside are affected by political, or they say political correct things. And so if I said in this village here so many people were massacred, and they were massacred by the government, military and so on, then the Sudanese government comes, no, this is a lie. Nothing has happened like that. People are all peaceful. And then they send films and so on which portray the people as living peacefully and no problem and so on. So they say there's nothing.
Cardinal Wacko's dramatic words touch on yet another fundamental problem that is central to the role of the media, and that is press freedom, or rather, the lack of it. This issue, which is dramatically poignant in nations not only in Africa but across the globe, is a cornerstone of social justice and is crucial to the very building of peace. And speaking again of the reality in his country, Sudan, Cardinal Wacko says it is also a vital requisite in trying to guarantee the right to religious freedom and practice.
Now, when these people come to Khartoum, they go on Sundays to the churches, and they said, oh, the churches are full, there is no persecution. I asked them, what do you understand by persecution? Say they expect to see Christians hiding or Christians being killed and so on. But I said, there are so many other forms of persecution, and this is going on here. And then don't forget that when there is problem among for the faithful, they tend to come together more strongly. Even that's of companionship, people who are in solidarity with them. And so they come in very, very great numbers for the services and so on. So these are some of the problems we have.
And from another area of Africa, the very southern one, where press freedom, it seems, is a reality, I received a very different and encouraging, may I say, opinion regarding the importance of the press. Do you think the media has a role in building peace in Africa?
I'll tell you, in South Africa, the reason why South Africa has not yet collapsed is because the media is keeping the government on its toes. I have no doubt about that in my mind.
Archbishop Buti Tlagale is the Metropolitan Archbishop of Johannesburg and the president of the Southern African Bishops' Conference.
The whole Zuma struggle, for example, over, what, 7-8 years, when he was first accused, I mean, this has been kept in the limelight by the media. The corruption that's going on in government, in the civil service, and any of these things, it's the media that's keeping the community informed, that's keeping the government on its toes, holding them to account. So the media has a huge role to play. There is no question about that. Once the voice of the media disappears, then you have dictators emerging, then you have your whole country sliding into, I don't know, into very lower levels of corruptions and abuse of power, etc. So the media has a great role to play. And that is why in Zimbabwe, for example, when they were critical of Mugabe simply banned the newspapers.
Absolutely.
You know, so no, I have no doubt that communication today, the media, is one powerful tool of upholding democracy.
Archbishop Buti mentioned Zimbabwe, a nation that is particularly dear to me. In the past few years, I could say it has almost been my tiny, probably insignificant mission to bring the struggle and the pain of its people to the attention of whomever listens. And his words reminded me of a meeting I had some months ago with a strongly motivated man called Garvin Augustine, who is studying to become a priest, and who belongs to an association called Mustard Seed Communities that looks after children with disabilities and with children who are infected or affected with HIV/AIDS in Zimbabwe.
How important is it to keep Zimbabwe in the tension of the rest of the world? I mean, after the election, it's just slipped away from the headlines. You know, everybody was thinking about it because of the election, because there was some political movement going on. Nobody talks about Zimbabwe anymore.
Well, you tell me, that's the media. I mean, if a hot story remains on the headlines for as long as it's attracting attention, I mean, then something else comes around and that goes down the rung. I think it's important. In any crisis situation, it's important to keep people, keep the message out there that people are hungry, that people are dying. In this day and age, people are still dying of AIDS. I mean, why? When in the West, people are not, you know, that is unheard of. Why are people dying of AIDS in Africa? Why are people hungry in Africa when in the West, you know, we waste so much? So I think it's important to keep those stories in the news, whether it's Zimbabwe, whether it's Uganda, whether it's Somalia. I mean, it's important to keep these stories where people are sensitized, where people are informed, in spite of whatever, in spite of differences, in spite of political differences. I think we have a responsibility to care for the other. We can't allow political or ideological differences to prevent us caring for our brother and sister.
That has always been my thought as well. And it's great to hear that it is shared by someone who is directly involved in caring and building peace and happiness where it is much needed. So our role is important, very important when it's free and fair. And as Cardinal Wilfred Fox Napier, Bishop of Durban in South Africa, and one of the delegate presidents of the Synod told me, it is so especially when it comes from the heart. Do you think the role of the media is important in helping get the message through?
I think extremely important, and I think the main role of the media is, I would say, let's move away from the glass is half empty syndrome, the bad news about Africa, and say the glass is half full, let's give the good news of Africa. And that did come across in one of the presentations.
There is good news coming out of Africa, isn't there?
Yes, there is, yes. And one of the things that came out was, please, if you talk about Africa, talk with love. Because love is going to make the difference. If you're only criticizing and there's no love, it's not going to make much difference. It's going to be negative. But if you talk about us with love, talk to us with love, it's going to make a difference.
That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.